Greetings, friends, and welcome to the Fire Emblem Podcast. I am your host and resident Lagoos, Jennif, and I'm joined today by writer and mirror mom, Guy.
Hi.
I'm also joined today by Gregor, our wandering mercenary.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
And lastly today by Johan, our poetic axe knight.
If I die after this battle, just don't bring me back. Just
don't worry, we can't.
Yep. Thank God it's set that way.
Your game only had classic mode. It's January 19th, 2017, and I suddenly feel like everything is Fire Emblem. It took me a long time to find characters to go for each of you. Because there's a lot of fucking Fire Emblem characters.
So effort actually went into that?
Yeah.
Research?
You can't tell. It doesn't look like any effort went into it, but yeah, I had to go through the cast of Fire Emblem games.
You're an investigative journalist. I'm impressed.
I only had two to start with. I had to find the rest. Mine was actually the hardest. It is actually not the Fire Emblem podcast, although you may not be able to tell in a minute. It is Radio Free Nintendo. This is our first episode post-Switch, post-Fire Emblem Direct. I mean, you could say the last one was post-Switch, but stuff was still happening.
Right. We were distracted and tired and
confused.
Some writers were like, "Are you impervious to hype? Like, what's going on with you guys?"
But if you talk about the NeoGAF thread, I think I saw this. That was written about the previous episode.
It was. We have no excuse on that one.
It was all about where we were talking about the anticipation of the event. Check your timestamps.
To be fair,
I would expect better from you as an editor.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't. Well, guess what? It's gonna sound like he didn't make any mistakes by the time this is done. So to that point, I was hyped for the event, but I was mostly terrified at this plan that we laid out for that show. And I don't think I anticipated how distracted I would be. And how much chaos there would be of people like private messaging me in the chat, people on Skype talking to me, staff email going nuts, people alerting me that like, yo, you can go pre-order stuff. Tell everybody on the show you can pre-order now. It's like, my God, what's happening?
It was way too much in real time. There was way too much to handle for us to do that show live, really. we could do it, but did it actually be coherent? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that we did it. I think it was the right thing to do, but holy crap. Like, that was... The degree of difficulty on that was absurd. Mm-hmm. It kind of makes me wonder, like, how new shows ever potentially operate. And the answer is they have dozens and dozens of people in the back deciding when to interrupt the hosts. And
yep. They're being fed information.
We are those people.
Yeah.
So, I really appreciate everybody who came out, especially the people who were in the chat. It was still a really good time. And it was the right kind of ridiculous for that event.
Yeah, I think we probably thought we would get more people, more call-ins on, but
it got so chaotic. Yeah, my intention was to do one like every 10 minutes, but it was so completely just out of control that I couldn't also manage the call-ins. What I probably should have done is found somebody, but the staff is also trying to cover the event, so, you know, finding bodies would have been...
Yeah,
it would have been bad for the site for me to go like, hey, can you step aside from writing news about this big news event that is bigger than any E3 we've had to cover in like 5 years?
And well, yeah, it's also just, the worst time of day ever.
Yeah.
For something
and just
like that.
Shepherd people into our ill-conceived Skype call.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to defend the event. I think we did a good job. I think all in all, it was still a fun show. There was a mistake. Our guest, Saren, inadvertently said that the triggers on it were analog. This caused all kinds of weird shit on the internet. It's funny, people talk about the show only that one time when we're wrong and not the rest of the 506 episodes we put together. But yes, it was a mistake. You know, she and I talked about it. It's fine. Mistakes happen. You know, I'm not upset about it or anything. I just wanted to put it out there and clarify what that means for like GameCube Virtual Console stuff. We actually don't have an email about that, which I thought we would. We'll get to it at some point, because somebody will email us. That's a prompt. But we have a lot of emails today. A lot. We have a ton of emails, and then more emails, and then some additional emails. So we're just going to do emails today. If you have an email for us, especially if you're going to ask us about the GameCube Virtual Console, you can send it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Again, send your emails about the GameCube Virtual Console to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com or other stuff, I guess. But preferably that, so we can talk about it. Okay, so I have the emails, and I never gave you guys an email order, so this is going to be interesting. So, Guillaume, would you read the first email?
GX writes, Dear Greg Star Heroes, Fantasy Guillaume, Streets of James, and Johnnig the Hedgehog. First, I'm sorry.
Second,
I'm glad that admit, came
Streets
quick.
Of James is pretty much perfect.
Second, my friend and I were discussing various Switch rumors, and one that came up was the possibility of Koei giving the Dynasty Warriors treatment to another Nintendo franchise. At this point, I realized you could tell me Koei is developing a Warriors game based on any property, and at some level, I would believe you.
And they thus, have.
Yeah, thus being the bastions of integrity you are, I prompt you to manufacture some rumors. What Warriors games will we definitely see on Switch? Animal Crossing Warriors? Rhythm Heaven Warriors? Picross 3D Warriors?
I wonder.
So this email did come before the Fire Emblem Warriors announcement, obviously. And I didn't think it was going to be such a crisis that we had to use this email right before the event. Like, it went on the back burner of like, we can sit on that one. And the answer was no, we couldn't sit on that one because, of course, they announced Fire Emblem Warriors during the Switch event. And they talked more about it during the Fire Emblem Direct, which we'll get to in a minute. But instead, you know, to give us some insight on how far Tecmo Koei has gone down the Warriors hole, they have, you know, basically produced Warriors games on like 5 or 6 anime series, including ones that aren't even well known. And then those have been localized here because why not? There's just, you know, there's no limit to how many of these games they can make, and apparently there's no limit to how many they will make. And, of course, as we said, they found one for us, Fire Emblem Warriors, which makes a ton of sense. But let's get real. What Warriors games do we really need? To give you some context, they just made their own Warriors game using their own franchise characters, and there's no rules, no limits. Like, there's an Atelier character in this game. Anything's open.
Well, I mean, I think all of us on this podcast have certain proclivities, James.
Okay.
I mean, Mylon Secret Castle Warriors?
I'm so sure Chouinaki Warriors was coming after that sort of...
yeah, I mean, I'm not done. That's definitely on the list. Chouinaki Warriors, ready. I mean, just think what you can do. Weapons, you know, things like long things you hold in your hands. I mean...
You know, dude, clearly the man beam would be, you know, a special attack.
A man's ultimate weapon.
Yep, yeah.
All right, what other monstrosities do you have in mind for us, John?
Come back to me. Let me think of a couple here.
I actually don't want to do that.
Well, back when Hyrule Warriors came out, I actually genuinely and without irony wished for a Zebes Warriors title. Like, I mean, Koei is already familiar. Like, let's give Koei another chance to mess up the Metroid franchise. I don't know. It could be cool. Like, I mean, Metroid Other M, like, for all its faults, like, they did give Samus more acrobatic moves. Like, didn't she kick in that game, or am I misremembering?
It's a game.
It was kind of a certain amount of context-sensitive kind of actions. Of course, the whole point of that was boiling a 3D action game down to something you could play with D-pad and buttons apart from...
Right. So there were some... Yeah, there were some contextual... attacks, just like, you know, when you get attacked, grabbed by a zombie in Resident Evil, you could repeal an enemy. Was that
And they like finish off enemies, like jump up on them and shoot them in the face at close range and all
right.
that kind of stuff. But I mean, the thing is, that was more the Team Ninja Gaiden kind of feel that I would say, you know, applied to Metroid rather than the Warriors kind of stuff. But you know, like, yeah, that's not what I didn't like about that game. I kind of liked it in general, but certainly what was bad about it was more storytelling, shoehorned pixel hunts, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Rather than the actual what they did with the gameplay.
Right. So, no, I think they could do something cool. You know, you play as Samus, of course. You could also play as I don't know, Ridley, I suppose. You could play as...
He's too big.
You could play as Adam, and weirdly enough, when you play as Adam, all the enemies are Samuses, and you can only hit them from the back.
Also, your...
No comment!
Your weapon is your hat. Clearly, that hat is a beautiful thing.
I don't remember the hat.
Who else? So, actually, you know what? No, I have a comment to go with that. I would love to see the internet after they announced Xebus Warriors. Just to see the furor would be spectacular. We would get a dozen emails. It would be amazing. Send us your emails to complain about a game doesn't exist. RFN@tenderworldreport.com. So, Pokemon would be difficult because of the licensing, but like that's the obvious one. Except
in terms of the number of characters, that's the biggest thing, isn't it? Yeah. You know, it's like if you say Metroid, if you say Star Fox, if you say, my personal choice would be F-Zero.
Oh,
if we
yeah.
We can't get up the rates anymore. We just, you know, I had a bunch of characters that were like 40 in GX with that.
Yeah, it was a ton. Oh,
characters.
Yeah. And they're all like, terrible.
You know, yeah, just, you know, crazy little girls fighting aliens and whatever. I mean, yeah, like that. But yeah, a lot of Nintendo's properties don't have a deep bench of characters. And obviously Fire Emblem is an obvious choice because you've got a whole bunch of sword wielders. You've got, seems like based on the way they handle Hyrule Warriors, they like to have a lot of female characters, which Fire Emblem can provide. How many other Nintendo franchises can provide that?
So the thing is, you also have to have a reason to beat up goons, because that series is all about just murking a bunch of just nothing. And, you know, there's not really, like, Pokemon, that would really struggle, because, like, what are you going to do, beat the shit out of 1,000 Diglets? Like, it's just, you just walk out on the field,
Rattata's kind of, you know, I could see that as the grunt Pokemon.
Yeah, but, like, that's sort of the appeal. So, like, you're going to have one Meta Knight, or, no, not Meta Knight, I'm sorry.
Have you given away a later suggestion there?
One Magnemite beat up 1,000 Pidgeys? Like, what are you going to do? So my recommendation is going to deal with the same problem, and I'm not entirely sure how to deal with it. But I would really want to see Punch-Out Warriors, because I want to beat up thousands of racist stereotypes. If we can do that.
It's like basically ending racism. That's what the game's about.
I'm standing up against stereotypes by reveling in them and beating Bearhugger up 150,000 times. Actually, you know, just to see the mock-up of Punch-Out Warriors would be enough. Just to see a trailer, like a teaser trailer, would be fantastic. Again, I don't know who you'd beat up thousands of, but besides Glass Joe.
Clearly, yeah. Glass Joe's just been cloned. Clone army of Glass Joe's, like the worst template.
Glass Joe androids or something.
You could possibly
I'm trying to remember. There's one fighter with a worse record than Glass Joe, and I can't remember who it is.
Nintendo Gabby J, who seems to be just old Glass Joe for some reason.
Because remember, Glass Joe has a win.
I'm trying to remember if Gabby J does as well.
Yeah, but there is a character who has zero wins. I just can't remember who it is. and the story apparently is allegedly that is his one win. Actually, according to this story, he has an accidental win against Nick Bruiser, who is from something, Super Punch Out.
It's Super Punch Out. Yeah, the Bruiser brothers are like the final boxers.
Oh, that's even fucking weirder.
That's so weird. Eh? That's some really Yoshisaurus Muncher Koopas level BS there. That is.
But Gabby J is just old him. But he just beat up an old man. But I think if you're gonna go Warriors up something, that, I mean, yeah, you could do a Mario Warriors, I guess.
You could do Monster Hunter, probably. Monster Hunter Warriors.
Fighting
tons of monsters.
I mean, isn't that
endless waves?
You're trying to kill a great Jaggy, and it's just shitting out Jaggies everywhere. And
that's pretty much it. But I mean,
I need you to go away.
Yeah.
I need you to stop what you're doing. I want to punch 150,000 Gabby J's. Like, if we can make that happen. Oh, beat up a bunch of old Frenchmen. He's only in his 50s. That's the part that's so funny. He looks like he's 70.
So boxing's like, you know, boxing into your 50s can age you quite severely.
Especially boxing as well as he does. All right, anybody else have any dumb Warriors ideas? I mean, great Warriors ideas? I mean, I accidentally mentioned Kirby, which does have the character base. Mm-hmm. I don't see the appeal necessarily, but that doesn't seem to stop Tecmo Koei. Nothing can stop Tecmo Koei. All right. Well, the one thing this gave us a transition out of, though, with Fire Emblem Warriors is, of course, the Fire Emblem Direct that they announced after this or during the Switch event came and went yesterday. And if you ever wondered if Fire Emblem was something Nintendo held sacred these days, the answer is both yes and no, in that yes, they really like that franchise. No, nothing is sacred.
What have you done for me lately? That's what I'm hearing with Nintendo and its franchises right about now.
Because they announced, so I made a nice little like graph of the number of Fire Emblem releases by year, and it goes 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1. That was Fire Emblem Awakening. Then it's 0 for a few years, 1. And the next year it's 3. And to date, right now, only this year it's 3. And next year we only have 1 on the book. But I expect that number's going to go up.
I've got this crazy idea for a Fire Emblem spin-off. It's like, what if it was in the future of the Fire Emblem world, and instead of like swords and sorcery, they were in tanks and stuff?
Fire Emblem Infinite Warfare?
No, Fire Emblem Advance Wars is what I'm talking about. I mean, that series, good. That series must be just weeping in the corner right about now. I don't know whether it will ever come back. The intelligence systems is permanently tied up with milk in Fire Emblem Dry.
Well, they have to deal with their occasional Mario RPG that they get asked to make. That's not really an RPG that much anymore. It's amazing how much Fire Emblem we're getting. So let's go through the announcements. We have Fire Emblem Echoes. What's the full name?
Shadows of Valentia, is something like that?
I think so, yes.
Yes, yeah. It is. What's menacing about that, that's a remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden, the second Fire Emblem game.
A reimagining, James.
A reimagining, yeah, excuse it's, me. It's,
yeah, Sarin, would, more... Sarin would shake, would wave her finger at you. Shame,
well,
shame
not here
on
right
you.
Now, is she? This one's a little bit weird because it's got like a city, like a town exploration mode and some dungeon crawling involved as well. Because this was, of course, the sequel to the first Fire Emblem game, so they were trying to, much like they did with their other, you know, their early Famicom games were the first sequel.
A lot of Famicom second installments had some quite, you know, notable departures in game design. That was kind of routine back then.
Right.
Very much less so in the subsequent generation.
Very obviously using the Awakening engine. You can see it in the art. You can see it in how the game runs and from the video we've gotten. For 3DS, which was shocking that we have a 3DS announcement right out of the gate. It looks cool. To be honest, it looks like a classic Fire Emblem game artistically. Like the art style is.
Yeah, aesthetically, I felt like that's like that reminds me of even though I didn't play them when they first came out on GBA, like the art that you'd see in magazines for those games.
Yeah.
Rather than the more sort of anime style that's kind of crept in.
I mean, it's still anime, to be clear.
I just feel it's like it's got a little bit more of a kind of painterly kind of quality to it, whereas that the current Fire Emblem aesthetic is more like literally an anime TV show.
And there's amiibo, yay amiibo, because here they come. I will say that one thing that somebody key on Twitter pointed out to me during the event was. His quote, "Bet Echoes will be the name for other remakes in the pipeline." And then if you look at how they write it, it's Fire Emblem Echoes : Shadows of Valentia.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. How many of these are they going to give us?
That's even though they, I guess, Would they, retcon Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon into Fire Emblem Echo Shadow Dragon?
Oh, God.
They've already done a remake, that.
Yeah, this is the remake of 2. They already did a remake of 1. I mean, I guess they could remake 3. This does feel a little bit like it's going for, maybe fans who aren't quite as enamored, the more classic fans of the series than, say, Awakening. People who came along a little bit later. They probably... And this is very late in the 3DS's lifespan. And this game's coming out this year. Did they give us a time frame?
May. Simultaneous this time. Because don't forget, with Fates, Europe was quite a way behind the States. I think
some of that was... quite a way behind the US, behind Japan.
Yeah, because some of that, I guess, was slotting because of the well-documented RPG maelstrom.
Yes.
Whatever. But, it was February in the States and then May here. And so, it's going to be pretty much exactly a year on.
The date they gave in the press release is May 19th.
Okay. Yeah. Which, I mean, if they really do intend to run the 3DS for till 2018, they could totally squeeze another one of these out there.
Well, I guess the thing is, to bear in mind with Fire Emblem is kind of a special case with 3DS because obviously 3DS has had games sell more than Fire Emblem, even though, these games have sold well. But it's the increase that it's seen on 3D. 3DS has been where it's broken out, especially, across the world. So it's got a kind of special affinity with that platform. And, Nintendo will probably be more loath to kind of pull Fire Emblem from that platform than they are the other franchises.
They sure have been.
Right.
Because they would then moved on to Fire Emblem Warriors. I'd be giving this out of order, but that's okay. Which they showed a little bit more. The teaser they showed during the Switch event was really just like Crom's arm and the sword. They actually showed some of the game in motion, confirmed it is coming out this year. Again, did they give us a time frame? I don't have my notes on that.
It's fall. That's all they
fall.
Said.
And then they said, also it's coming to new 3DS.
Well, I'm glad that they kind of dispensed with the it's sort of on old 3DS of Hyrule.
Right, the illusion that you can play it on a non-new 3DS.
They just said, no, this can't, you can't do it.
Yeah.
They did, and I wonder if part of that is the new 3DS appears to have sold quite well during the holiday season.
Well, I guess the thing is, with the bump that 3DS sales have received in general, because of Pokemon, really. But that has inevitably led to more new models being in circulation and current use. Because those are just kind of the ones that are being pushed. And apart from the 2DS, which is, of course, the budget option.
Right.
If anybody's gone for just wanted to buy a 3DS, I don't really care. What it is, funnily enough, Pokemon is in 2D anyway. then they're getting the new model probably.
And they had that sale of the 90 or that special edition $99 new 3DS.
But
that was so limited that it was a drop.
The 3DSs were pretty much wiped out in retail. I mean, I still don't really see many of them out there. And all that was out there before were news.
Yep, they were hard to find.
So there's a lot more news out there. They probably expect that some people upgraded. They could probably get away with saying, hey, this is only coming to new 3DS. And of course, they have an engine on it. They already have an engine running because they're probably just using the Hyrule Warriors engine again.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is much like Echoes is filling in the library, reusing some engine stuff and they get the opportunity to make a little bit of money and push that Fire Emblem to promote Go ahead.
Sorry. My personal wish is that this kind of, this faith that Nintendo is putting in the 3DS, that's not the word I'm looking for. Kind of the
support?
Yeah, the support that they're putting in the 3DS will convince maybe Atlus to stick around a little bit longer with the 3DS and give us Etrian Odyssey 5 maybe and stuff like that. I don't know if Atlus is very eager to jump from 3DS to Switch, because they've known a lot of success as well.
And Etrian has again got a very special affinity.
Yeah, how do you solve it?
DS and 3DS, the dual screen nature of those platforms.
Right. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed for some more announcements for 3DS this year. But anyway.
So on top of this, they finally showed us Fire Emblem for mobile, which is called Fire Emblem Heroes.
Heroes. I love the way we just to add to the sort of melange of name, where it's like, well, there's all these Warriors games, but then Dragon Quest is Dragon Quest Heroes.
Yeah.
But Fire
it's
Emblem
not, it's
Heroes.
Not a Warriors games. They couldn't call it Warriors.
Fire Emblem Heroes is a mobile game.
Yes. Well, and it is a mobile, it is a Japanese mobile game.
Gotcha.
Yeah, gotcha by the gotcha. But like,
I guess that's the thing, this is the first of the DNA games, Nintendo mobile games, you could leave it Pokemon out of it because it's outside of that initiative, that seems to have embraced the typical way of doing business in mobile games. Tomodachi Life is very gentle with its sort of microtransactions for what everybody says. I've never played it. Mario runs a flat fee. So this is really kind of, okay, yeah, we're doing that model all in this time.
Let's give a little bit, because the first two are relatively self-explanatory. This one's a bit different if you didn't see the video. So art style immediately, like when they showed the screens, it's like, oh, that is a mobile game. Japanese mobile game. So basically, you have heroes from various Fire Emblem games who are on a relatively small battlefield. You can use your finger to kind of move them around and engage other heroes who are your enemies. You get gems, I think is the currency that you can use to randomly draw heroes. You get your choice from the weapon triangle, so it'll give you like swords, axes, magic, you know, that whole triangle. So you can at least pick which part of the triangle you want to fill out your roster. They give you best value by giving you essentially the price to get a draw drops on consecutive draws. So if you really are looking for that Lindis. If you really want Lin, you can just keep going. And the price just keeps dropping.
Viva Long Ku was the...
Long Ku's the one they were trying to sell.
They used in that for some reason.
He's just a rando in Fire Emblem Awakening. Who cares? But basically, you can just keep going at it until you get the one you want. Oh, and you can buy gems from that screen. So that doesn't break your sequence. So best value gets all new kinds of meaning on that one. But basically, you get heroes. Sometimes you get special hard levels where you can get heroes directly through gameplay. You level them up, increase their stats, and then you essentially play through it looks like a relatively restrained version of something similar to Fire Emblem combat. You know, you move characters around and you engage enemies with them. It looks okay. The art's interesting because there's lots of different art styles depicted in it. I guess this is what we should have expected was coming eventually. This is a DNA style mobile game. Like this is what a lot of their games look like. And
yeah,
you know,
but the whole gambling aspect, like, come on, really?
Well, so,
the Japanese bloody love their gambling.
The thing is, Guillaume, come on. In Japan, kids can only spend about $100 a month. All right? So don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah.
It's fine, man.
I will say that it depends on how aggressive they are about saying you have to pay to get gems. Because they say you can earn gems through gameplay. Is it you can earn an gem through gameplay and it takes five to draw? Or is it can you earn quite a few gems? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how much it's going to run you. There are other mobile games in Japan that follow almost identical business model. The decreasing cost per pull is a little bit unique. Not hugely unique, but a little bit. It's not different from PuzzDraw. It's not different from, you know, the Kingdom Hearts game. And this game is whale hunting. It is. But, you know,
something that Nintendo said they would never do.
Well, you know, this is what they got. The mobile audience said they wanted when Mario came out. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how much they want it. Do you want it now? Do you fucking want it? this is the series that seemed most likely to end up as a gacha game, because there are a billion characters you can earn. You know, there's lots of characters you can unlock, and it looks like they're gonna have a pretty deep roster. And in fact, they launched a website so you can vote on who you want to show up in the game, and then tweet it to all your friends every day. You can vote every day. Have you voted today? And you get credit for on your My Nintendo. So there's that. Anyone else have thoughts on that? Or we move on?
Yeah, let's move on. It's making me sad.
I'm really interested in how well this one does.
Well, sure, it's going to be interesting to see, but it's not something I'm personally interested in playing.
I'm definitely going to play this game. Like, I don't know that I'm going to pay anything for it. You know.
Oh, James, you'll pay.
Hmm.
I've.
If you want that long queue, you're going to pay.
James Whale Jones.
I actually don't want long queue, to be honest.
The legend of James Whale Jones.
I actually don't want long queue, to be honest. There is an important thing that we didn't mention. This game comes out February 2nd. It's
out
soon.
Well, I guess it kind of felt like it wouldn't necessarily be that long because it kind of, the whole Mario Run jump in the queue thing, like, because Animal Crossing and Fire Emblem were thought to be coming next after the Tomodachi lifestyle of Miitomo. Yeah. So, you know, that's I guess it's not hugely surprising that it'd be followed because it kind of feels like maybe it could have launched before the end of the year, but they wanted to put Mario in that Christmas window, especially because of the different model, I guess, with the whole, you know, paying the flat fee to unlock. It's not hugely surprising it's coming that soon, but yeah, I guess the most interesting thing is going to be how this kind of persists with its revenue generation, because obviously it's a very different prospect from something like Mario Run, where it's naturally just going to totally fall off because there's no persistent reason for you to keep plunging money into it.
I will say they were clear about the fact that you do not lose your characters when they die in battle. Like, if they wanted to be fucked,
yeah, so just a nip in the
if
bud.
If they wanted to be fucked,
pay to get them back. Yeah,
no, pay to draw to hope you get them back.
Oh yeah, that. yeah.
Even then, you've lost their stats. So good luck. I don't know. I'm interested. I'm curious how aggressive they are about making you buy gems versus getting the ability to earn them. I'm curious to see how the difficulty compares, because it looks very Fire Emblem-y. There's a map, you have your character has a movement range, your forces are on there, your enemies are on there, you pick the units you want to use for a battle, you move them across the map, and you eliminate the enemy and you clear the battle.
No, see, just the most pronounced sort of difference or compromise that you could see immediately for the mobile format is the small map size.
Yeah.
It's like, typically, obviously they tend to get, like, bigger sometimes as the game goes on, or more complex anyway. That is a significant part of kind of the battle, is like, well, you might have to kind of move your units to a particular location or something like that. There's not going to be a lot of that, your kind of objectives and environment kind of base when it's so kind of small. Although I think they said that the terrain effects are going to be
right
in there. If you're on a square that's got the woodland in it, it's got evasion advantages and stuff like that. Assume that's all there. But
with really tight areas and the fact that they know what enemies they're bringing into the fight, they could. And some of this shows up in Fire Emblem Fates to a certain degree. Really force you to kind of puzzle solve a very specific problem they can put in front of you. There's a very, very late Fire Emblem Fates level where you're going through you're inside a castle, and you're actually inside the Hoshido castle, and there's this narrow corridor that's just lined on both sides with ninja, and you can't get to them because they're at the fault. You have to get all the way down the corridor and turn. Or you have to break one of the walls in the corridor and then pour forces inside. But they can do a ton of damage if you get stuck in the middle of the corridor and can't get around. The first time I played that level, I got my face wrecked because I didn't understand how to get through there. And I had to kind of problem solve that one specific area. They could build levels that are really just like that.
We'd have to be kind of very small scale version of that. Yeah,
yeah. It's like the level would just be that one problem, because that was only one thing you had to deal with in that level. Once you got past there was other stuff that you had to deal with, but that was the one part of the level that really proved a stumbling block for me. So they could make levels that are just that. It's that one spot you really have to think about, how am I going to attack this to get through? What units do I need to bring? Oh God, I need another axe person. I should go I should go do a random draw and hope I get Hector. But, you know, I do like that they let you at least pick which one of the color type you want. That's a big deal for me.
Because in that scenario you speak of, what you wouldn't want is to keep getting completely useless kind of draws. If
God damn it!
You're already kind of well-rounded in certain areas, but not in one particular one.
Right, so giving you the ability to go and say, no, I really need this one is actually really helpful.
It's not sure to work, though, because as we've saw in the example, instead of getting the assassin he wanted, the guy in the trailer got a dancer.
She's actually useful. I don't know what he's bitching about.
Sure, but I mean, yeah, not exactly what he needed.
No, but hey, it was cheaper to draw the next time. And then he got Unku. I do want to point out the fact that they actually name dropped the narrator of Yuri Lowenthal, who just does anime dubs at this point. Is like, yeah, Fire Emblem, they brought Mr. Anime Dub in, and they actually name dropped him. They know what they're doing. Next announcement was Fire Emblem for Switch 2018. End of announcement.
It's out there.
Thanks for the announcement, Nintendo.
So it's one of those sort of aspirational announcements, I like to call them. Yeah, I think this is a little more certain than some of the ones over the years. But like, when they did the Shin Megami Tensei Crossfire Emblem announcement, that was very aspirational.
But they at least had somebody took the time to go in and like edit a video together. This didn't even get that.
and indeed, the Travis Touchdown thing was very aspirational. It was just like, yeah, I want to bring this character back on this console.
Here's what I want to do
at some point.
I don't have any funding right now, and I'm actually kind of drunk, but I'm just talking.
Hey, he also wanted to make a Fire Pro game, so he's got his goals in mind. And then I missed something, didn't I? Is that it?
I think that was it. Yeah, okay. I don't know. I think that people made a big deal out of like, oh, so many Fire Emblem at the same time, so much Fire Emblem at the same time, but two of them are the same game, you know, the new 3DS and like Fire Emblem Warriors. We get one new 3DS game, we get one on the Switch, and we get a mobile game. Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem overwhelming.
We already knew the mobile game was coming. You know?
Had time to. Yeah, gird our loins.
It is a bit overwhelming because you got two on the Switch. It's
one of these when you look back at where Fire Emblem was, you know.
Sure.
Juxtaposing it with this, it's a hell of a thing. But yeah, we've had time to kind of warm up to this point.
But this is the point where Nintendo really just said, no, Fire Emblem's a core franchise for us. Like this. Right.
It's going to put it to the test to some extent, though.
Well,
isn't it? Like I said, it's had the success on 3DS, this very particular kind of revival, and maybe how much of it was down to pairing up the characters and the kids and all that kind of stuff. And this is going to this sort of breadth of Fire Emblem related stuff is going to see how well can it translate to other platforms, how well does it translate when you have kind of characters and trappings but you don't actually have the gameplay,
right? How much is the franchise versus the gameplay?
I wouldn't say it's quite got like that kind of absolute status yet, but it seems like Nintendo, obviously with the sales of the 3DS games, feels like it could do so. It's gonna try and get it there.
This is the first time Nintendo has decisively said like, no, we think this is important. I guess we got that sense when they said, oh, and our next mobile games are Animal Crossing and Fire Emblem. Like Animal Crossing, God, here it comes. And then, like, when I really thought about it, I went, oh, God, Fire Emblem, they could go nuts. And they did.
But the thing is, though, they could always go backwards from that. I mean, let's not forget there was a time where, we had three Metroid Prime games in a short, was it like 5-year span?
And two GBA games.
We also had Fusion and Zero Mission and Pinball and Hunters. And, like, that wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't.
And then you've got now. So, don't get too comfortable.
Fire Emblem Pinball. Coming 2018. Looking forward to Fire Emblem Kart and Fire Emblem Just Dance and Fire Emblem Karaoke. What's the karaoke game? We Sing?
SingStar.
Yeah, NBA sure. Jam with Fire Emblem. We'll get on that. That's EA's contribution to the Switch lineup, the Ubisoft Rabbids Fire Emblem crossover game. Looking forward to that.
Fire Emblem NBA Street should be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun. I think, you know,
Fire Emblem Fight for New York, that's going to be awesome.
All right, that's it. Punch out. We got to punch out now. All right,
well, I just wanted to say, though, of the bunch, I am really interested in the Gaiden for whatever reason. Because
yeah, I think it looks
I really
neat.
Didn't... Yeah, I didn't... I really can't get into Fire Emblem proper, even with Awakening. So I stayed clear of the trio of games that came out after. But this one, it seems like maybe it fixes some of the stuff that I didn't like about the series.
Such as?
First, well... It adds dungeon crawling, which I've discovered a taste for with Etrian Odyssey and other games from Atlus, so that's good. But also the random number generator thing for when you level up, I cannot stand. And did I understand it right that you can guide the character progression? It said like kind of freeform character progression or something like that. So it sounds like maybe you can invest in specific attributes. Or
I think that's more so in the Fire Emblem games in general. A character is locked into kind of an evolution path.
Sure. Okay. So I can go from like Pegasus Knight to Assassin or something. Like horse, get a big sword, and
that may have been what they were trying to say. You know, they showed it in the context of somebody changing class, so that was what I interpreted it at. But I didn't dig into it. So I just like I was overwhelmed trying to think of what Fire Emblem they were going to drop on us next.
Right. My interest is gone then. Doesn't seem like that big of a deal.
What we specifically refer to is when you level up in Fire Emblem, the fact that like how many stats are actually going to increase
and by how
is
much
kind of randomized,
right?
Yeah, that kind of.
And yeah, I played the GameCube version where sometimes you could level up, and I'm sorry, too bad, but nothing increases. You get nothing, and that really left a bad taste in my mouth for a long time. Like, oh my god. Like, how can you do that to people?
I always like the comment, because the character portrait comes in and they have a comment based on how much they like,
yeah.
Wow, I'm really making progress, or like, Jesus, what? Like, sometimes they're just infuriated, like, oh, I've got to do better. Or sometimes they're just morose, and those are my favorite. Those are the ones where I just have a good laugh about it. I'm like,
It would be one thing if you only had to restart when you lose a character, you know, and go back to, like, do an entire chapter again. But when you finish the mission and you leveled up and, yeah, you get nothing and you feel like you need to restart, like, that's... I prefer to just quit playing at that point.
Actually, you know, Awakening especially, and then maybe Birthright, really, really ameliorates that by basically giving you unlimited opportunities to get experience.
Right.
So yeah, it's the conquest model, I guess, is where that really would hurt more, where battles are themselves kind of a scarce resource.
Well, and even then, there is a level cap in Fates. In Awakening, you could just reclass them to the other class, and they drop back to level one. In Fates, your levels, once you get to the second tier of levels, your classes, your level stays with you. So the only thing you can do is get that one item that lets you go up past level 20. Which is just a weird change they made in that game.
Right.
So yeah, that's a lot of Fire Emblem. We have an email still. We were going to talk about emails. John.
I got him. Leo writes, RFN crew, I know some people will say that this isn't the right time for this, but I have a prediction that I hope is true, and I want you guys to inform me as to how likely you think it is to occur. Nintendo Switch pricing came in at higher than some were hoping. What if the Switch is the first part of a trio of quote-unquote Nintendo systems? One being the Nintendo Switch. Two being a Nintendo home console, basically the Switch without a touchscreen or the ability to remove it from the dock so that it's not portable but also less expensive, and Joy-Cons are not attachable, so they save money there too. Three, a Nintendo Portable, a smaller screen than the Switch, and Joy-Cons that are now permanently part of the system, so that smaller, cheaper screen... So there's a smaller, cheaper screen and less expense of detachable parts. All three systems play most of the same games. Obviously, anything that requires touchscreen can't be played on the home console. I already pre-ordered a Switch, but my whole family plays Nintendo games with 4 3DS units, and it would be nice if the second and third systems are less expensive.
So, yeah, I'll read the next one. Yeah. So Dan from Canada, which isn't this email, but he writes in a minute, also notes that they didn't really use the touchscreen at all in the demos or anything during the Switch unveiling, which he's right. But Leon S. Kennedy writes, the screen looks way too small on the tabletop for multiplayer. Using a single Joy-Con sideways also looks uncomfortable at best. Do you think Nintendo is setting us up to buy a Switch XL Pro in 2 years with a larger screen and larger Joy-Cons? Are we being had?
I don't know, man.
Well,
I'd be surprised if there wasn't a different form factor or something within 18 months. I mean, that's typically right. What happens, whether it gets off to a great start, like DS, and which gave way to DS Lite not that long after. And then, of course, you have something like 3DS, but struggle more. Then we had the XL. Which was kind of a fairly substantial improvement in a number of ways.
So the one thing I would say is, I actually wrote about this a while ago. The one thing that impressed upon me from their presentation is they are undeniably and just visibly proud of what they've done with the Joy-Cons. There is a lot of tech in those things they are extremely proud of. We haven't used them. We're not sure if their pride is misplaced. We certainly got a lot of emails, and I think there's an email later that deals with this, of people who were less than enthusiastic about the showing of motion controls. I get that, but I think decisively this tells me that Joy-Cons ain't going away. That the Nintendo views them as core to what the Switch is.
Yeah,
yeah. Leo's idea of a kind of a 3DS like Nintendo Portable, with the Joy-Cons just stuck to the smaller screen, that wouldn't work because you would be saying goodbye to so many of the uses that Nintendo have shown
of
the Joy-Cons.
What if though they made a game that. Is that and this is something I actually touched on in that article. What if they made a Switch that is smaller, but it's not a portable only. It still has a dock. You can still dock it, and you could still use Joy-Cons with it. But they don't. You wouldn't attach them. It's got inputs attached to it at all times. Permanent inputs. Mm-hmm. It's got because the class or the they call it the Pro Controller. Mm-hmm. It does have motion. And it does have their HD force feed. What do they call it? HD Rumble or something?
HD Rumble.
It's got their 4K force feedback.
That's catchy. I like it.
4K. It's HDR though. HDR. 4K HDR force feedback.
It's 4K HDR. Yeah. So put that stuff in there. So basically, it's got a built-in Pro controller instead of built-in Joy-Cons, and then you can sell the Joy-Cons, which they are separately. And then you accomplish the I'm not going to lose my Joy-Cons, but you still can take it with you and you could still can use it in multiplayer mode, even smaller this time. The XL, though, I'm not so sure about because that will likely increase their costs, not decrease them. And my guess is they want to make this thing cheaper sooner.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you got to think a lot of it is going to be about how it performs in the marketplace.
Sure.
What is and feedback as well? Because obviously they're going to be doing that. With their research sort of arms, they're going to be trying not just looking at the actual hard data, but also trying to get people to tell them what they like, what they don't like, what would be what they'd be interested in, and that would probably inform what a second model could look like. As we've been expecting that there would probably end up being multiple models of this, or certainly could be, going back to Iwata's comments about a family of systems and all that kind of stuff. I think the possibilities are there, and then how it fares is going to have a big bearing on which sort of potential options they would pick. I mean, if you sort of apply this back to the 3DS, it had it done better early on, we may never have seen 2DS. you know, right. or certainly seen it under different circumstances. You know, but that became a thing of like, well, price is too high on this thing, and you know, for all the sort of big, you know, kind of promises they made about what 3D was going to bring to the new games and all this stuff, how cool it was. They brought out a machine that lacked that feature. Now, of course, that feature is cosmetic. Whereas, right. as you said, in some of these games, you know, they might actually depend on, you know, particular features that are built into the Joy-Con. So, yeah, that could be trickier to sidestep than stereoscopic 3D was. But still probably possible, I would have thought.
I mean, as long as they said that you could buy Joy-Cons and it would work, I don't think they will release any model of the Switch that is incompatible with Joy-Cons. That seems impossible to me. At this point, one, two Switch, you know, for all of its goofiness and the fact that you know, don't look at the screen. The screen just shows somebody milking a cow. It's not relevant. The idea of playing ping pong by ear is weird. But, you know, they seem pretty, they seem like they've reached a point where they're doing this weird mix of like, here is a game for the casual audience that you can take to a party. And that they were very tacitly basically saying you should be playing this game drunk. I mean, if you looked at
See, that's the thing though. I feel like there's a bit of a problem, messaging problem for me. On the one hand, it's like, yeah, take this with you, or, you know, presumably if you're a parent, you're buying it for your kid, you know, your kid could take this with him or her to his friend's house, to whatever, and all that. But then you've packed these detachable controllers that, by definition, therefore, can be lost from the rest right. of the system with this tech that they're really expensive. You know, like, you lose one of those and that's $50.
Yeah.
I mean, how eager are you to take it to somewhere where you're going to be getting, you know, plastered drunk, or, you know, you want to give it to your kids to take running
around
the park?
So when they go get plastered drunk.
You know, like, we're just, you know, I mean, and also kids can be complete monsters, and so someone will steal the little bit of it or something. I mean, God knows, bury it. I mean, just, it doesn't, to me, the John. Whole notion of, like, you can take this thing with you and, you know, have all this sort of fun kind of party experiences, that seems more on the cheap and cheerful side than the, you know, HD rumble and all this kind of stuff. I don't know whether those components of the message really go together.
I mean,
and also, like, I saw someone express kind of a concern about docking the Joy-Cons to the Switch, and like, does it wear out, you know? Because I talked about going to the in-laws, and they had a Wii U, and they've had it for 1 year, and that stylus is not staying in that gamepad.
Really?
Like, it's completely, yeah, like the whatever is supposed to offer friction is gone already. So, yeah, you got to think about that. Like, so 8-year-olds can just really grind away at that stuff.
The
like
one thing, the one thing that has the stylus comes out of the top of the gamepad.
Yes. Yeah,
it's not like the bottom of the new 3DS, which makes it a lot more of a problem.
Oh, it sure does. the Switch should, I would imagine that they click down, so gravity should be holding them in place. But if I'm going to take this thing with me, I'm going to have a dedicated, you know, insert for my messenger bag. That's like, that way I know where the Joy-Cons are. They're in the bag.
Oh,
with
I
it.
Mean, look, it's all sorts of sensible precautions
yeah,
one could take.
But yeah, I know,
you're gonna, if you're going to actually try and market this as like, oh, you know, it's basically like just that the sort of core unit of, you know, the screen and the two Joy-Con is, you know, multiplayer, local multiplayer, anytime, anywhere. Like, that's kind of a big part of the message. And I just feel like having those controllers be so expensive, it really runs counter to that, because, you know, for all the sensible things you can do to prevent problems, you know, when you're talking about hopefully selling it across, you know, millions of people or whatever, you're just going to get these situations where stuff's going to get lost, and then it's like, you know, and then you have somebody has a bad experience with that, then they're going to tell, you know, other parents or whatever. You get bad word of mouth going. I'm not seeing the value added myself. Obviously, I've not played any of the games, you know, and all that. We're using this force feedback, and also, I'm not talking about it from a personal point of view.
Right.
It might well be cool for me to play these games. I am not going to lose them at the park. Believe me, I'm not worried about that.
Are you going to get drunk and wear a foam cowboy hat, though?
Yeah, it's pretty damn unlikely. I've not had a drop to drink for a long time.
That's a thing, right? Like these accessories. These accessories are expensive, but then like all the like the cow udder hats and the cowboy hats, and like I don't have that stuff.
No, no.
That's another expense.
Yeah,
it is. If you really want to get into it, that reminds me of the. Do you reckon anybody will actually sell those things? Like, do you remember the Twilight Princess? And somebody like sell some sort of. Oh, it was basically like costumes for your Wii remote. So
yes.
It was like a sword and shield and all that. That's so silly. But I mean, the point I would make about this is that I think back to, you know, when Nintendo talked at the launch of like Motion Plus, and basically what they said was, you know, well, we were looking at gyro tech, you know, when we launched the Wii, but it was too expensive, basically. You know, it's like, well, you know, it's something we could have pursued, but it would have raised the cost. That's not what we were looking to do at that point. And so, you know, we went with the tech we could at that time, that was, you know, affordable, that was in the right kind of range for them. And, you know, that was clearly the right decision. You know, they did that, and then they came back with Motion Plus a few years later when presumably costs had changed a bit, and they probably had greater certainty about what the market was for that sort of thing. And then, you know, Wii Sports Resort was itself a successful product. I feel like, but, you know, if it hadn't been, then that one product would have tanked and that would have been the end of it. The problem is you saddle the whole system with it, and the prospects, you can do things like what they did with 2DS, you know, and try and sort of get yourself out from under it later. But you've already set yourself on a disadvantageous path at that point. I just feel like this is not really using the same kind of logic that got them the success with Wii, even though it seems like they're trying to channel some of that.
I think part of what we have to keep in mind is that they built a system that you can take with you. There is a little bit of playing with their words here, like almost entendres, because basically they don't want to say it's a portable system because they have a portable system. They're still releasing games for said portable system. But in the back of their mind, they are cognizant of the fact that this may become their portable system. But they don't want to just kneecap the one they've got in the marketplace. It's not the Game Boy Advance. Or I guess it's not the DS.
Well, yeah, but again, I mean, as we said many times, I mean, I feel like that was contingent on how well the DS was going to do.
Right.
Once it started doing well, they moved to kill it. If this, you know, did come out of the gate doing really well, you might find that 3DS gets deader a lot quicker than
yeah,
the
but
right
it's, they're not ready to kill it yet, is my point. But this thing could kill it, but they don't want to do it right now. So instead, they've got this portable system that could one day kill it. But right now they need to discuss and build use cases so consumers can imagine why they're taking it with them. And part of their target demographic very much seems to be people in their 20s and 30s. And so John Lindemann is forbidden from buying a Switch.
Here we go. Again?
People in that demographic, they're basically saying like, okay, what's a use case? Well, playing a game on the go is obviously a use case. What's another use case? Well, going out and party games, and that's the opportunity. So they're trying to – I wonder if the Joy-Con was represented more in this presentation simply because they wanted to show, but they do seem to be like unfailingly proud of this thing. So maybe –
Yeah, well, I think you make a really good observation with that, and but also that, you know, to get the old Darth Vader quote in from the original Star Wars, don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
It's
because you might end up pricing the system too high and screwing its chances of success. That's the problem I see. They could have made Wii more expensive with better Wii remotes, and we could all have talked them, and you know, the games probably would have been better. You know,
yeah,
like the early games probably would have been better. So, like, from my point of view, who would have bought it anyway, pretty much, you know, eventually anyway, like, that would have been better for me. But, in, you know, but for the success of the system, they probably did the right thing.
I want to raise a counter here, though. So, yes, Wii was cheaper, but Wii was $50 cheaper. And yeah, it had a game with it. It had Wii Sports, which of course is the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but people were complaining. Well, people, the press and gamers were complaining about that. They were like, well, it's barely a game. It's just a collection of tech demos.
Yeah, well, guess
it really
what?
Caught on with people. Yeah, I know. It really caught on, but anyway.
You know what it only included? It only included one Wii remote.
This, mm-hmm. Yeah, that this was the Wii Play was like the thing there was, you know, got another collection in a bundle of mini games in a bundle, but this time with a remote. And then was it like, I guess it was $10 extra for Wii Play as opposed to just the remote.
At some point, Wii Play was cheaper than just buying the Wii remote.
Eventually, I guess. Yeah, but it's been this ridiculous seller.
You do get two in the box this time, although they are.
That's a big deal, and I think
Just don't be the right hand player. Just don't.
I think
don't
that's one of the that comes back to another component of it that felt a little bit muddled with the presentation was that, you know, that's such a central part of it, but then they showed arms very prominently,
right?
Which is one case. Where, you know, if you was both going to play the same way, they have said that there's other options for how you control. You would need two sets of Joy-Con.
Sure.
Which that seems to be the exception to the rule. But by putting it so prominently, I do wonder whether they diluted the sort of what I think would be one of the strongest messages of, like, this thing is two-player all anytime, anywhere, at the drop of a hat.
But that's why they showed so much of 1-2 Switch. Like, it's even in the name. I mean,
But 1-2 Switch is just, like, kind of, you know, mini-game collections. It's not necessarily what people were looking for. I don't know. Like, I thought also that the presentation didn't really drive home the fact that this comes with two controllers out of the box. And it's only today, like, I realized that Yooka-Laylee is going to have a co-op, and Shovel Knight is going to have co-op. And I realized, oh, wait, okay. So I, like, co-op out of the box, and Karen and I can just play these games, like, two players
Are you going to be a
good boyfriend and give her the left controller, or are you going to take that one for yourself?
I don't know. Like, we're going to have to test it out. But anyway.
There's nothing to test.
Yeah, anyway, we'll see. But, like, even Bomberman has, like, a co-op mode, and that...
And that game that looks like ass.
Well, yeah, but the co-op mode makes it more, you know, makes me more likely to pick it up. Like, it's not that easy to find co-op games. Like, even on Steam, like, I keep looking, and it's usually, like, very puzzle-heavy games and that are a little bit frustrating, especially, you know, co-op, because you have to synchronize or whatever. But Switch, right out of the gate, seems to be, like, in the first year, is going to get several co-op games that are more... casual, action-oriented.
Yeah,
and it just makes sense when it's like as standard a part of the system. But I just kind of feel like that having arms so upfront kind of got away from that a little bit, because then you're thinking more about, well, you know, am I going to have another set of these really to play a lot of the two-player games? Obviously, we don't know, you know, what the general sort of thrust of the software is going to be like going forward. We've only got what's probably, you know, somewhat partial picture, even just for this year, because you've got your E3, you've got to think there's some things up their sleeve there. I'm sure Mario will be, you know, the star attraction there, which we already know about now. But, you know, what I mean? It just feel like, I think personally ARMS looks interesting. I feel like it looks like...
Puyo Tetris with multiplayer is built into the system.
Yeah, that's
pretty
cool.
I would enjoy playing something like ARMS, but at the same time... If to really enjoy it, you know, I have to get... I mean, the thing is, if someone's bringing their Switch a lot, or they own a Switch, well, then they would have a set of Joy-Con, so that's okay.
Right.
But if it's literally, here's my friend that doesn't own a Nintendo system, and, you know, I want them to partake in this game, then you're talking about a second set. That's, even though 1-2 Switch is kind of the, you know, mini-game collection in the vein of a Wii Play, maybe ARMS is the game that actually needs to have a bundle with the with another set of Joy-Con, if that your setup is really the preferred one.
Yeah,
I
could totally see them doing that too. I mean, so you raise a good point, and I was talking about this with Soren yesterday. E3 is like 5 months away, almost to the day. Like, it's really close, and Switch will only be through its first wave of games at that point. Like, they could... We're gonna get another Nintendo Direct before the Switch launches. We just will. Like, We know we will. For F's sake, we got a Fire Emblem Direct. It's like we'll get another Direct between now and then. And you know, I wonder if multiplayer is the way they're going to try to sell this thing, because it, you know, we just went through the lineup and it didn't really hit me until we really went through the lineup, especially the third party stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of co-op there.
Yeah, several indie developers have noticed that, oh, this thing comes with, you know, two controllers and its own screen. Like, I can do co-op. I can so do co-op on this thing.
Yeah, and just that kind of makes, maybe if you have ideas for co-op or something, it gives you an excuse to think maybe this might actually break through. You know, if this becomes a popular feature of the system, it's just something that, you know, like players kind of expect and look for, then maybe my idea can actually find an audience there that it wouldn't elsewhere.
And the controllers are expensive, but you are getting two if you buy the $80. So if you were to buy two Wii remotes at launch, I believe they were $30 a piece, so that'd have been 60. So it's $20 more than that, which is not cheap, but it's not as abysmal as when you look at it and it's go, oh, it's 50 for one. Like, that's a rough sell. I mean, it just is. You know, but I think, you know, I'm looking at the accessory list. There is a lot of third-party accessories. I wonder if we will see a third. Maybe it doesn't have the rumble. Maybe it doesn't have the.
Yeah,
the,
well, this is it. That's what I'm talking about. Sort of the, not just third-party, but also
Nintendo?
Potentially Nintendo themselves, in terms of if it becomes clear that this is a barrier, you know, will they start sort of releasing effectively like reduced form, you know sort of lesser Joy-Con, that, you know, cheaper, you know, right. Maybe that you would be more comfortable to take around with you, you know, when you play. But I mean, to that point about that, this set, that being a big sort of plank of the system's appeal, I think Leon's question about whether the screen is big enough in the tabletop mode, as they call it, is worth considering, because, you know, is it how playable is, you know, in terms of, okay, you take it with you and then you put the kickstand out and you break the Joy-Cons off and you both, you know, huddle around it and play.
So,
is it going to be big enough? You know, that's kind of tricky. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, how far away do you have to be optimally?
Yeah, how
actually
uncomfortable? Yeah, so what is the practicality of that at that point?
So there are impressions from the event in New York. I actually listened to Jeff Gerstmann and Dan Reichert of Giant Bomb describe it. They had a fake airplane set up at the event. And they had it sitting on the tray table and were playing on it that way. And they said it was a little small, but, quote, the gap between you and the tray stand is like twice as much as you will ever find on an airplane. So obviously it wasn't a very realistic setup. It did seem like it works okay. What I was impressed by were photos of the viewing angles that this thing worked at. You know, normally when you're dealing with these flat panel screens, there's always the risk that the viewing angles will suck. But, there were images with fairly aggressive angles, and you were still able to see. So just give some technology reference here for somebody who doesn't know what I'm talking about. TV screens, if you look at them from some angles, you lose color, you lose detail, and it could just be hard to see them in general. And by angles, it's usually like the closer you get to looking at it from the side. Mm-hmm. The viewing angles seem to be really good on the screen, like really good.
No, it seems important, because if you're talking about cramming around the thing,
right,
you know, you might not be perfectly head on, you know,
right,
with it.
But if, you know, if that works and you're sitting maybe 2 to 3 feet away, it's small, but it's doable. I mean, relative to how much of your eye space it's going to take up to a 3DS you're holding a foot out, it's probably still bigger when you really think about it. Like, how much of the percentage of your vision range is covered by this screen? It's probably still bigger if you're using like the old 3DS. It's a hell of a lot bigger if you're using like a Game Boy Micro.
I mean, but it's an interesting point, though, because again, we talked about, go back to what I was saying about how it performs in the market and the feedback and all this. I don't think it's out of the question that if this proves to be a popular feature, but there's a lot of feedback out there that's like, you know what, it's a bit small for
bigger.
This sort of thing, but we like it anyway, then you could get what Leon's talking about in terms of, you know, a beefed up version that comes on later on. That's, you know, how popular these different aspects of the system, presumably, you know, in more terms, hard data terms, you know, the games that push these different aspects, that'll probably be what determines, you know, the different kinds of models that will come, you know, 18 months, 2 years out, presumably.
Bigger. I know we talked about the price last week, but does anybody have any revelations on how they feel about the pricing?
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's different for us in the UK because there's a compound effect. There's the fact that it is more expensive than people were expecting. There was, amusingly, one online retailer called GameSeek over here, which evidently bought into the reports of £199, which I expressed skepticism about, so much that they actually took pre-orders at that price.
Oh, wow!
And they are having to awesome. Honor them. Like, so, yeah, though I think something like 1,000 people or whatever, and you're getting a bit of a deal, say the least, that went along with that. But yeah, it's the compound effect of, yeah, it's probably, I don't know, £30 like dearer than the same words as I might have expected, you know, but then those expectations were factoring in what's happened with the currency. And for a lot of people, they might not be thinking about that. You know, the after the referendum, the pound's in the toilet, and you know that's going to affect everything. They're just going to look at it in terms of how much of their budget does it take up.
It's $279.99, right?
Yeah, so you know, almost you're 1-to-1 with dollars. Right. So that is expensive.
Well, it's about two. So $300 is about £250 at this point. But you have to keep in mind that
the VAT component, which yeah, you know,
is, right.
It's not like they're getting ripped off. I mean, it is just a fact. The pound is not worth that much right now, and we have a 20% sales tax. Essentially, VAT is a little bit different from sales tax, but because it's a long all
right.
Sort
yeah,
of points but in
that's
chain,
that's
but, yeah.
So like I paid roughly like $340 total. When you include tax. So in the end, that number is about the same.
Yeah. Like, no, exactly. I'm not saying it's out of whack.
No, but it does. It's jarring.
It still hits people in the wallet, you know, for whatever reasons that is what it is. You know, it hits them that hard. And the other thing is the pricing on, you know, competing platforms is not that way. You know, it's kind of those platforms, PS4, Xbox One, you know, they've already been in the marketplace for a while. You already have a bunch of bundles and options and all that. So, you know, when you're talking
games
about...
cheap games too. Really good cheap games.
And also, and of course, you know, for them, it's a lot harder to react to what's happened with the currency.
Right.
It's like, oh, we're going to put the price up now.
Yeah, fuck you, know, we're like, going so up.
That's the thing. The timing of it has not worked out well for Nintendo fans. that it would happen just before we had a new cycle to set everything, you know, kind of the new baseline.
One of the digital marketplaces, and I can't remember whose it was, but it's one of the ones that just does automatic currency conversion. Was it the iTunes store? I can't remember. Like, because they have their own regional prices. One of them just had like prices went up in some markets where their currency's been hit. Like there's like, hey, we can't keep selling it at this because people are just literally changing their region because of the currency differential. So guess what? Everything's going up. And, you know, I mean, Guillaume felt this acutely as the Canadian dollar and the US dollar started going in opposite directions. Like prices got weird. Prices got really weird. Like you look at the number, you're like, the fuck? But I mean, some of that is inflation's. Inflation's really tough to deal with in a lot, economically, just in general. But you know, when you're so used to being able to just price compare two items across regions, which you don't do for literally anything else. Like, I bet Guillaume has no concept of how much I paid for milk the other day, but he can guess how much I paid for Zelda when I pre-ordered it, because that price is well publicized. The price I'm paying to get, you know, shoes really isn't. So it's unlike most products where you actually can do an apples to apples comparison on the number, and you sort of settle into like, oh, well, if it's this there, it's going to be this here. And for that to change, I guess, would be very jarring.
Yeah. So that's the thing. What I'm saying is, in terms of the price over, is it's a different equation for us than it is for you.
Right.
In terms of how people are reacting to it and all that kind of stuff. For me personally, I'm kind of on the fence about getting it early right now because, you know, obviously Zelda, it's a huge deal, looks great, all that stuff. But it is on Wii U.
Right.
And, you know, I been quite enjoyed playing big games of that fashion, like a Xenoblade Chronicles X, or with a lot of it being off TV and all that. I'm fine with that on Wii U. However, probably the biggest selling point for me, the for paying that premium right now, would probably just be the fact that the 720 native display on Switch is going to look a hell of a lot better.
Oh my god, yeah.
Very, it will look so much sharper, because not only are you talking about the resolution, but the fact that it's a native output, it's not streaming. And right. You kind of covered this. You talked about when I was playing Twilight Princess HD off TV and all that. You've got issues with color bleed. You've got artifacting. The streaming tech is good. I've been really pleased with what
what it's doing is impressive.
What it allowed me to do on Wii U, over this life cycle of the console. But there's no doubt that playing it on Switch is going to be a higher fidelity experience. So that's actually far more important to me than the reported difference of, was it 900p on Switch on docked versus 720p for Wii U on the TV. So, because I know from stuff like Xenoblade that is, I'm going to play the game an awful lot off TV. That's going to happen. So it's just a case of whether you want to shell out that much money. When maybe there could be advantageous deals down the line as more games come out. Depending how well it fares over here, and maybe some retailers give some attractive bundles or something. It doesn't have to be anything from Nintendo's end, even.
And we've always said that buying a launch game, a launch system, is I don't want to use the word it's a gamble, but like you know you're not getting best value. It's a decision you're making anyway. It's not a rational decision. It's a decision that you just made. Like, so sitting out on the PS4 until the Pro came out was what I won. And then sitting out on the Pro's launch, and when it didn't quite perform as well as retailers seemed to think, because they had really aggressive sales during the holiday season, I won again. But and now I have access to an absurd number of games for dirt cheap. But, there are people who were at the PS4 launch who would also feel like they won, even though they know that, economically speaking, there's no way they can argue they won, because they got to have the experiences they wanted to have when they wanted to have them.
Buying anything at launch now is insane. I mean, if you're only concerned with money, buying anything at launch is just dumb.
Yeah, so the fact that I bought a Switch already, even though, at launch, there's really only one game I want to play. Puyo is, I want to play that, but it's Puyo. But what Switch offers me for that game in particular is much more attractive than what I'd have it if I bought it on PS4 when it comes out there. Because A, I can get it digitally, which is nice. But B, I can take it with me. And that's cool.
Yeah, it's that kind of game.
So we have an email from Desiree, and we'll take a break after this. And I'm not going to read the email, because she basically talked about, the fact the price, and the price is very high. And it's much higher than expected. It doesn't come bundled with the game. And one damn game announced for launch day, and Pro Controller is $70 while Joy-Con is $80 a pair. Quote, please, I want to love Nintendo so much and root for them and fight for them, but why? Why do they make it so hard? I'm just so sad.
I can't really understand that kind of sentiment.
Please comfort me. Thanks, guys. P.S. Project Octopath Traveler. Why?
Why? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Yes.
Yeah, like, if the why is why that game's name, Square Enix has the most powerful drugs. Have you seen the naming conventions of the games
of the everythings that they've ever done?
In the fucking Kingdom Hearts series? The naming conventions in that series are so screwed up that at some point I was convinced that somebody had really powerful ecstasy.
Yeah, when you start throwing fractions into the name of your franchises, I don't really know what to tell you.
Somebody unfortunately led to a quote from that series into my timeline, and I had to retweet it because it hurt me. That series... Here we go. Chip and Dale are currently analyzing the data that Ansem the Wise provided to Riku. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Don't try to make sense out of Square Enix. It's not worth it. We're not going to try to give you hope for Nintendo. I think there's good stuff they're doing on Switch, and I hope that some of the stuff we talked about that we're positive about, and some of the potentials that they have in the future, and some of the prospect of this being a really cool co-op system with two controllers in the box already. Like, I hope maybe that helps out a little bit. But don't try to make sense out of Square Enix. Like, that's really gonna screw you up.
But yeah, like I'm pretty, I was, you know, audibly disappointed by the price when we recorded last week. And so that was a big sticking point. And I had nothing really exciting that I found really exciting about the system until today, like the co-op stuff I'm really into. But other than that, like, I mean, I just replaced my 3DS and I just kind of fixed my Wii U, and I'm just looking forward to getting through the backlog on the Wii U, and I'm just happy that the 3DS is still getting some sort of support. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with just sticking with the older console, and sure, it's not as shiny and new as the new stuff that's coming out. But yeah, I don't think you're expected to immediately buy the system when it releases for all the reasons that we mentioned earlier.
I'm gonna including the go back to the previous email that, you know, there might be and what James' example with the PS4
right.
Pro, you know, the better model that comes later.
We're all like new 3DS, but 3DS early adopters, and
right.
they rolled out an ambassador program.
Oh yeah, we all had the ambassador app.
I mean, I bought mine even late, only to watch multiple iterations of it come out, which I still have not picked up. So
yeah, I will say the other thing to keep in mind is one of the problems the Wii U had in the marketplace was that something in that thing made it difficult for them to cut the price. Something about the gamepad.
Yeah.
And we could see that. Like, they were reticent to cut the price even when they couldn't sell the damn things.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they learned that lesson with Switch. And the fact that the technology in it is largely, I mean, it's custom, but it's based on other existing technology. They're not trying to put power PCs in 2017 in a device. Like, hopefully the prices, they have price flexibility. Prices can go down over time. And that's, you know, that there's some hope for you. That if the price...
Well, yeah, I get, look, if the price did result in a bad starts are not, you know, total killers. I mean, you've seen...
The Kinect.
PS3 came back from a bad start. 3DS came back from a bad start. You know, Xbox One has rebounded to a certain extent as well. So it's not fatal necessarily, but it's still costly. I would still, I guess you could take the view that, yeah, well, we can always go down on the price, but I still feel like it ultimately could be very costly in terms of the potential size of the install base if you don't get that positive start that you're looking for.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, we're gonna take a break. Don't freak out about everything just yet. We'll take some time, see how the market goes, and also Kingdom Hearts 0.2 Birth by Sleep: a Fragmentary Passage. Like, don't fucking try to make sense of what Square Enix is doing. They're on powerful drugs that we can't get access to. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back with a few more emails. Stay tuned. And we are back with more listener mail. You can still send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I'm not going to beg you for emails about the GameCube Virtual Console again. I hope you got the message last time. But we will continue our email campaign. Who has not read an email yet?
I have not read one.
Then, Greg, would you like to read the next email?
Brad?
Yep.
So, Brad writes, "Hi, guys. Question, if Blaze Blue for Switch is released in the Japanese market and I can download/purchase said game, could I play it despite knowing zero Japanese? I worry my excitement for such titles is premature. Should I be worried these games will not be localized? Is it time for me to start learning Japanese?
No!
I would love your thoughts on a region-free future."
I would never recommend that to anyone! So even if you didn't know Japanese and Blaze Blue wasn't coming out in English, which it is, and in fact, Continuum Shift is already in English, and so it's not like a big deal. You could play that game without understanding it because the story sequence doesn't make any goddamn sense anyway. And you can find, in fact, for Blaze Blue, you will need to find tutorials online to teach you how to play all the different characters anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, in the internet era, you can bungle your way through a lot of stuff, you know, as long as there's some sort of meat to the game that doesn't depend on you, you know, appreciating the text, like a visual novel.
Yeah, I mean, you can always substitute the story with some Blaze Blue fan fiction. I'm sure it's out there.
there's some. You don't have to go fan fiction. There's some shit that's canon. Like that. That's a weird series. But yeah, those games. That game specifically is coming out in English. But we did find out today that you will be able to just have different regions accounts on one Switch hardware and buy from different region stores, which is really cool.
Yeah, so that was the thing. We kind of, when they said it was region free, I guess we all kind of said, well, okay, the cards will definitely work.
Right.
But what about the online store? And now, yeah, we've got pretty solid confirmation that you can have 8 different accounts registered on the Switch, and that when you go to the store, you will go to the sort of regional variant that matches the location in that particular My Nintendo account. So right. If you've got ones with different locations, you could go to the different stores, and presumably, you know, maybe you have to jump through some hoops in terms of how you fund the wallet, you know, in that, like, kind of very much like what when I'm with PS3, I did a bunch of that. I bought, you know, PS1 classics that were not on the US store or the European store, but you know, it's totally doable. And it's definitely something that I'm looking forward to with this system. Hopefully, you know, it will have the kind of Japanese support, for instance, that you know, make this sort of thing really interesting. Because I mean, I guess Wii U, you know, they're really, how many Japanese Wii U exclusive things?
Just
are
the virtual
there,
console stuff, really.
Yeah, yeah. Which which makes the digital part of this even more salient, doesn't it? Actually,
right. My hope actually is that the fact that it can do this means we won't have to, that it's enough that keeps, like, Nintendo using the virtual console example, as the people who most profit from a successful virtual console, they're less likely to allow one region to get so far out ahead, because they probably don't, they would probably rather you just buy it with your own currency in your own market than F around with a bunch of different regions accounts and then have to deal with that. And maybe that's enough of an impetus for them to go, like, okay, we can't just pretend like the US doesn't know that Japan got 75 games on the virtual console more than they have. Maybe it'll drive parity a little bit.
At least with the stuff that's feasible. I mean, of course, right. Yeah, there are games that were never localized that they could put on, like your Fire Emblem Gaiden, mentioned.
Need the English. But, I mean, they've put out games that weren't localized before, but they were selective about it.
Yeah, get games that were easily playable, for instance. But also, just like, you know, what we've had, you know, in recent times is things which could have done, you know, so for instance, certain Square RPGs that have localized counterparts.
Right.
They were not released, you know, on Wii U Virtual Console in the West, whereas they were in Japan. So, yeah, maybe it would narrow that gap a little bit, but you're back into that old game of trying to discern how that process works.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that in general the libraries have regional parity and that it's not a big deal and we don't need to worry about it. But, you know, there may be some games tied to a license that just doesn't make sense to release outside of Japan. That's just nonsense that might be worth taking a look at or fun to play. But I would imagine that in this era, it just doesn't make economic sense to make a console game for Japan exclusively because of, well, the state of the console market in Japan.
Well, yeah, I guess, but that gets to the point of, like, you know, what space is this going to occupy?
Yeah,
like, certainly,
sure.
They've been talking up kind of the console side of it, you know, as you said before, you know, perhaps in large part just because they're trying to position it alongside the 3DS rather than directly on top of it,
right,
kind of thing. But you know, in Japan, you'd rather be a handheld because they actually sell. So that will be kind of interesting.
But yeah. Interested, definitely interested, but no, please, please, please don't go learn Japanese unless that's what you really feel an almost religious desire to do, because that is a tremendous amount of pain. I mean, work. Pain. It's pain. It's pain.
Beyond importing Japanese games, I'm kind of relieved that maybe I'm going to be able to play some games that were mysteriously absent from the Canadian eShop.
You know, that was like, weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was that game that John played, the tank game, that was ultimately disappointing by the creator of Ikaruga, but...
Kokuga. Kokuga. Right.
Kokuga. So that never came out here. That's weird. We never got an answer.
That is odd, isn't it? Bloody hell.
It really is. And I don't think, you know, there's plenty of eShop games that are not available in French, so I don't think that's the hang-up. who knows. So hopefully I'll just be able to, quick and dirty, like, change of country in my account, and I can just download stuff.
I'm holding out hope that, again, that's the kind of thing that the fact that you can will be enough to drive parity, and that kind of crap won't happen.
Yeah.
But you still have to deal with individual rating boards, probably, and that's probably the hold up for some of this stuff. So, Europe, I'm sorry, you still have too many rating boards. Get rid of them. Get rid of all the rating boards. I don't want to know what's in my game before I buy it. Okay, next email. I guess I've read to John.
GX writes, "Dear Spike, and Greg."
Just back up a minute. Why? I mean, I should probably just be grateful for small mercies, but why am I not Spike?
I don't know.
You're Yoshi already, I guess?
But I'm not. I'm Greg. I don't understand it.
I don't know.
Maybe you can't have more than three spikes on the screen. Limitation. I don't know.
Who the fuck is Spike anyway?
The greatest character.
The greatest nothing.
At some point, you're going to wake up and the Twitter page for RFN Podcast is just going to be Spike everywhere.
And that's when I go change the password. Are you suggesting to go back to our first email, Spike Warriors? GX's other email? GX's first impossible email? Let's get to his second one. All right, John, continue.
All right, with the reveal of the Switch's online system being centered around a smartphone app, Nintendo has arguably the most bizarre online play service on the market. It seems to require a second device, which many but not all players would have, and based on the description given, is controlled externally from the system. But for as weird as it is, it makes some amount of sense, considering the prior problem as perceived by both Nintendo and the audience. Presumably offloads the social functions of the smartphone as not to allocate system resources to keep it running. It ensures wired and wireless headsets work, though you wouldn't be able to voice chat and use headphones for game audio. It likely lets you access the social features while the system is off, and it seemingly gives parents more significant control in regards to online access. One can certainly hope the eShop will also be accessible on the app to make navigating that much more convenient. Plus, heck, this could potentially reduce the time needed to connect to online features when compared to Wii U and 3DS. Unknown costs and sparse details aside, how do you feel about this structurally? Is this a reasonable solution to what you see as Nintendo's current network limitations? Are you okay with the idea of keeping a phone nearby to perform certain online functions, or is it an undue burden on the consumer? What things do you think the Switch's online services will need that Wii U and 3DS don't currently provide?
One thing I want to say before we get into this question. I could hear John dying reading this email.
Yeah. John kind of kills me inside.
John, just the way you read this email told me everything I need to know about your answer.
I mean, I think this is
I've already
expressed my displeasure that they are handling voice chat through a smartphone app.
Well, I mean,
think that is really silly.
What worries me more is that it's a smartphone app. Like if it was a responsive web page. Like, I could bring it up on my computer and have my computer sit next to me, and it's just fucking Skype. It's Nintendo branded Skype. Like, whatever. You know, I'll deal. But the fact that it's going to be just for smartphones, and I read somewhere this is a paid app. Is that true? Like, it can't be. That would be insane.
Well, this speaks to just the general messaging issue. You know, with the online stuff, I feel like they've really fallen short with the message. Obviously, when we recorded last week, it was still filtering through and all that. We've had a week now has passed.
And nothing
I'm sure
has
changed. Obviously, they're going to talk more, but I feel like it's been long enough that, you know, impressions are being formed in people's minds, and they're probably not that good.
Right.
You know, we've got to a point where it's like, well, you're going to have to pay for Nintendo online multiplayer for the first time with very little information about, first of all, you know, how much that might be, why is it worth paying now? Then, you know, we didn't charge you before, you know, how are you going to make it worth our while kind of thing? It just, mm-hmm. yeah, and then this social features and voice chat apps, and it's not very clear, and especially with Nintendo's track record not being, you know, perceived very favorably.
Just for this online stuff. They really need to sit down. Yeah.
Maybe they're
really
going to address all it. You just wonder how much of this, especially because, you know, they've literally said, you know, the service in terms of online is going to be kind of in this kind of beta state for a while. You know, they're not even going to start charging until the fall or whatever, because
six months.
You wonder how much of this is because they don't have the answers all worked out themselves yet, which is not a particularly great place to be this close to launch.
But I mean,
seems like they're always in that spot though when it comes to anything online.
But they could at least talk about, you know, what they're offering. Like they could talk about what this virtual console game for a month is, because. You know,
again, the messaging on that has been, you know,
because you know, we heard that you get the game for a month, but then afterwards people are saying I don't think that's accurate. I think it's for a month. This is the game, and then you just get it. It's like we need some fucking clarity. Like,
yeah, apparently that's been confirmed too. Yes, you have the game for a month, and then at the end of the month, the game just goes away.
Right.
But you can play it online, so there'll be upgraded versions of the original games, which is actually really cool. I think it's a good idea.
But like
I don't
like
mind it.
Let's say you could buy that game for cheap during the month or something. Like I don't know. Like what?
Yeah.
What?
The thing is though, I thought about it, and I like that idea, just because, number one, you buy one of those games, how long are you really going to play it anyways, right?
True.
It's actually more fun to have people involved, like, in a game of the month kind of thing, to actually, like, sit there and say, hey, do you want to play this game? It's available for a month. Let's kill it for a month, and then, you know, we don't care about it anymore, right?
Yeah, there's not going to be many games that have a lifespan of more than that.
Exactly.
And also, just the fact that they're actually going and adding a feature to an old game like this is not something that they've generally done before. So, you know, I feel like that could be part of a decent message with it. So, okay, well, yeah, we're charging when we haven't charged before, but we're doing things, you know, that we're giving you value that we haven't.
Well,
had
and
before,
how much
you
know? Are we charging?
But,
like we need to know this shit.
It's just to have it out there. This level of ambiguity, when you have a bad track record on this stuff, the only likely outcome for most people is that they will assume the worst.
Yeah.
Right.
That is not a good place to be in perception-wise. So I really do think they've botched this a little bit, even though I assume we're going to have, of course, more information soon and clarify things. But just to even, you know, to have this amount of uncertainty we've had in this week since the big reveal is, you know, may have caused some damage that can't be undone altogether. In terms of the specific element of the smartphone thing, I mean, also as someone who is not glued to a smartphone like all the time, this does worry me.
It worries me too. I have an old smartphone, and like, is it even going to be supported? You know, am I going to have to upgrade my phone? Like, what about like, what if the Switch ends up having a life cycle of like 5 years, and you know, like the iOS upgrades, and at some point, like, it's not really feasible to use whatever app Nintendo conjures up on like older models. Like, are people going to have to replace their phones for the social features? Like,
well, that just indicates to me that it's not going to be, it's going to be WeSpeak 2.0 and really not widely used. I mean, to me, what disappoints me about this too, I mean, along with the fact that they don't have Twitch streaming, which blows me away, but it amazes me that they even put something in the trailer for a Switch that looked kind of esports-ish, because this is about the most un-esports thing you could possibly do. Are you going to have a tournament with a bunch of people with their fucking cell phones out talking to each other like in Splatoon?
But nobody in esports uses the built-in chat. They use Discord, and they use other, like, they don't use the chat built into these games.
Well, but I mean, they do for console games though. I mean, they have headsets on the whole nine yards.
For console games, yeah. But for like, yeah. if you're playing an online PC game, you're almost certainly using like Discord.
PC's is an entirely different realm. You can get anything from anywhere for that. But I'm talking with consoles. I mean,
sure.
Everybody just uses voice chat on Xbox Live or whatever, and they use headsets. That's what you do. And this is completely the opposite of that.
What makes me more curious than anything is I want to sit down and talk with them about how they got here. Like, what was the decision tree that said, all right, fuck mobile?
One interpretation is a sort of passive-aggressive interpretation in terms of, oh, smartphones are ubiquitous, are they?
Yeah. Said we wouldn't do it. Ah, yeah, okay. Mobile, here you go. You want mobile?
No.
My thinking was that Nintendo doesn't actually want you to be talking online. Like, if the hurdle is too high, like they're like, yeah, good. That's kind of what we wanted in the first place.
I feel the same way. Yeah.
So, what I'm hoping is that when they actually show this app, which may or may not currently exist, is that we see that, oh, this is a really full-featured thing. Like, this is...
Yeah, that's the thing.
This is almost Smart Glass-esque in how it integrates with the game.
That's smart the point, what? Is that there's a lot of different...
exactly.
I feel like there's a big range of how well or poorly this could work.
This could be garbage.
Maybe it'll be, like, once you actually see the whole package and how it all works, like, it'll make sense and seem like, yeah, you know, I could see where they're going for there. I don't rule that out, but as I said, that the problem is at this stage that people have got such negative, you know, just calcified negative impressions of Nintendo on online. They're not going to think it's going to go well, even if it does end up doing so.
How could this work in any reasonable way? I mean, I'm sitting there playing Splatoon 2 on my TV.
Yeah.
There's game audio blasting out of the speakers. Do I have what? Do I have my phone on speakerphone while I'm playing?
You use your phone headset, obviously.
I'm kind of playing the game and trying to hear what the sounds and the music from the game as well at the same time.
What, do you want voice chat or you were mad when we didn't have voice chat with Splatoon? Well, now you have it, so suck it up, Buttercup. Get the picture.
All right, Koizumi-san. That's fine.
Splatoon 2. You can't tell, but I'm posing a 2 badly right now.
Yep.
I just hope that it's something that turns out a better experience than we speak, because that piece of hardware like actually made me almost cry.
That's
like,
a better experience than a proctology exam. Great, good.
I was trying to communicate with people in Monster Hunter Tri, and I couldn't figure out. I was trying to learn the game. I couldn't hear what people were saying. I was just.
It's a well-named game, Monster Hunter Tri.
For me personally, the worst
game to use to learn that with. By the way,
for me personally though, I'm not like that big on the whole voice chat thing necessarily. So, in some ways, the aspects of like matchmaking and all that kind of stuff being, you know, friends list being mobile managed is more worrisome in a way.
Hmm.
You know, like that part of it is a little bit concerning.
It's so frustrating to me because every Nintendo platform is the one where I could use voice chat the most. On PS4, Xbox One, I don't really care about it. On the off chance that I actually have, like, I know so few people on those platforms that I would want to play with and voice chat with, like just friends. I know tons of people on Nintendo platforms that would definitely, I would use voice chat all the time with them.
Let's think about it. If they do the update, you know, the online update thing, because I mean, that's going to be, if you want to beg for a listener mail question, that's going to be a great one. Which old game would benefit the
there
most
you go.
From having
yeah.
the online.
Well, I mean, I'll leave it open.
I'm thinking James, John, Contra of some variety.
Oh, God.
Voice chat. I mean, that would be amazing.
It would be. I would love it.
Oh, my
it.
God. John, we might need to reactivate the RFN Twitch if this goes real south.
I will chip in as many Predator quotes as you can handle.
Yes. I mean, we should...
Dylan, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the best case scenario. This is my everything's gone beautifully scenario. The mobile app is more than just your voice chat, you know, and party management. Like, it's a full-featured thing that you could take with you on the go. People can, like, say, hey, let's play a game later. It'll schedule. It'll show up. It'll integrate onto your phone's calendar and be like, hey, you've scheduled to play this game at 9 o'clock with so-and-so. It shoots you reminders. You know, you can use the chat when you're not in any games right now. It's party chat, like Xbox style, where it just goes with you. It's just, this is my, it's like a Discord channel almost. These are my friends. If who's on, we can talk. It's got text messaging built in. You know, it's open. It's a communication conduit with your friends that's just tied to your My Nintendo account. And like, it's not built in like, okay, you are currently in Splatoon 2. Now you'll be able to chat in Splatoon 2. Like, it really is like My Nintendo Messenger. And it's scheduling assistant, game planner. And yeah, you can buy stuff in the eShop right now from mobile because they have a responsive webpage. If it's just integrated directly into the app, even if it's just like a webpage wrapped in an app, in the app wrapper, like that would be good. Like, hey, we can buy this game right now. Let's go buy this game. It's out right now. Let's go get it. But it's, I mean, this thing is going to be push notifications for Nintendo to give you ads. That's why this thing's on your fucking phone. Like, that's what this is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, is there going to be, what, like a Bluetooth headset? Like, I don't use my phone for any of that kind of shit.
So there is a PDP-made kind of headset on Amazon for the Switch, and it just seems to be a wired thing, and it's...
What does it do?
Like, we don't know. Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, the options don't actually tell us what it connects to. I assume, yeah, it would be to a phone, but... Like, we don't know.
Did PDP not know? Did they not know? Did Nintendo not tell them? Were they watching that presentation? That's when, oh, fuck.
I think it's rather there's something we don't know, but...
Maybe there still is some way you can communicate without the phone thing. You just don't get the full-featured experience. But, you know, if the phone app told me, like, if I could say, like, say, hey, let me know when John is online playing... Contra 2, so I can get in there and yell at him.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Obviously, that's the biggest advantage, the biggest upside I see is like, is he okay? You know, 3DS at a friend's list, you could see where people are online, Wii U and stuff, and you know, sometimes.
But only if you were on it too. Like, this would let me see when I'm not on my Switch.
And you'd have, like, you could join games sometimes. I don't know whether that was absolutely universal with everything, but you know, it's like, oh, someone's just racing random people in Mario Kart 7, I can join them.
Right,
you know, kind of thing, but like, so that, you know, it was okay. But the fact that you can actually see these notifications without actually using the Nintendo device seems, you know, like a big deal in terms of, oh, well, then I might boot it up and do something with it. There's
grounds for a good companion app to go with Switch. The fact that voice chat is also in the companion app, like, I can see saying voice chat is a feature of the companion app, so you could be in the voice chat. Like, say, open like a Discord. Like, you can be in there and talk to people who are playing on Switch right now if you so choose. But the fact that they seem to be selling this is how you voice chat on Switch is kind of fucking nuts.
Yes. Yeah, this PDP headset, I mean, it's just like $40 for a headset, and there's just no, they don't show any connectors or anything. It's just a headset.
I mean, I have a Bluetooth headset for my phone, so I guess I'll use that if that's what I have to do. Like, okay. It's a one-ear headset, so I can still hear the game on the TV, and it noise cancels the background. So it's got a microphone on the front and one on the back, so it's canceling everything that it's not hearing from the one point at my mouth. So, like, it's not going to pick up the TV and stuff, but, yeah, it's weird. It's weird. It's weird. It's weird shit they're doing. Nintendo's being real Nintendo right now.
Yeah, that's real Nintendo.
That's like maximum Nintendo. That's 120% Nintendo.
It is. They really stepped their game up for sure.
They have
you want voice chat? Well, hold on a second. Okay.
Somebody get said, yourself, like, hey,
get yourself a cucumber. Hold on.
Smoke signals. We got smoke signals.
Get yourself a cucumber and a cigarette. All right. Let's voice chat this up. And you're like, what? Reggie, where are you going with this? Doesn't matter. Give me some whiskey too, son. It's going to be a long night.
Somebody somewhere in Kyoto was like, hey, we need voice chat. And the engineer goes, all right, just talk on my phone. Got it. Phone app. Done. And he's like, no, wait, that's not what I... Oh, damn it. Somebody somewhere has a sticky note on their computer that says, think twice before saying anything. And it is because of this app.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Make sure I word this correctly. Don't give management the opportunity to go, sounds great. Phones. Perfect. Actually, the worst case scenario is you get the app and it's just a phone number. It says, call this person if you want to talk. That's That's the worst. Personally, I want it to be that. It's just your phone number. Oh, God damn it.
What's your friend code? Is your friend is your phone number?
Yeah. Exactly right. They're like, no friend codes on Switch. It's wink, just, wink.
It's like, oh, you want to talk to somebody in Spain? What's the international code for Spain?
Ah, that's so brilliant. That's so brilliant.
Oh,
it's technically
God.
Not a friend code. Oh, man. Wow. I'm impressed. Yeah.
I'm... That's mortifying because now I'm just thinking, it's like, okay, if I'm going to talk to the Famicast, I'm going to have to go 181, and then they're like 12-digit phone number. Is that their friend codes now?
Yep, and then they're just going to spam you with SMS messages.
Does that mean I have to give Ty my phone number? I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to do it this week.
Mm-hmm.
We went over 20 minutes, so. All right. That's going to do it this week for email. We've still got a lot of email that we didn't get to this week. And, you know, keep sending them if you've got questions about the Virtual Console, specifically about the GameCube Virtual Console, which we're still waiting to talk about. I guess you could ask us about Multiplayer Virtual Console if you want. But I'm not begging. Also, if you have other questions about Fire Emblem or Nintendo's other major franchises like Fire Emblem or additionally Fire Emblem, Or
if you're the one Advance War fan out there who's just feeling so abandoned right now, you can also
we have
just
a support
make
group.
It a spin-off.
We have a support group called the
Advance
Power
Wars,
of Money.
Warriors. I mean, I don't know why we didn't suggest that.
That's what it is. Fire Emblem literally just snowballed Advance Wars using the power of money. There it is. That's what happened. I put this in terms you Advance Wars fans can understand. There's just no winning against the power of money. It's not a fair power, and Fire Emblem tapped into it. I want to thank these guys for being here this week, and I want to thank everybody who sent in their email. We've made it through Switchmas, and now it's the March to March when this thing comes out, and we have more to talk about, probably, hopefully. And whatever Nintendo directs to do between now and then, you can listen to us on your cell phone exclusively through a paid app. Or otherwise, I guess, if you want. But we're going to start making you listen to your Bluetooth devices soon. And, Greg.
Yes.
What is our end music this week?
Well, you know, I originally considered non-Fire Emblem options. But then, you know, when the Fire Emblem Palooza hit, I thought, well, it just wouldn't be in the spirit of it to not be. So we've got music here from the original Famicom version of Fire Emblem Gaiden. You might actually recognize this piece from an arrangement that was in Smash Brothers.
Yeah,
this is the original version of With Mila's Divine Protection.
Excellent. Well, on that will do it for this episode of Fire Emblem Free Nintendo. I don't know what the fuck to call the show. Bye, everybody.
Radio gotcha Nintendo, I think is what it is.
You have to put in 5 gems to figure out if you get the new episode or not. Damn it, this is 406 again.
Later.
And also there's a possibility that you got a worse version of the episode.
You got to keep trying.
You get 103.
You got it in 76 bits. God damn it. That's the end of the show. Stop listening.